This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Rhys Roth, co-founder and director of Strategic Innovation for Climate Solutions, a nonprofit that works to accelerate practical and profitable solutions to global warming. Rhys leads Climate Solutions' Harvesting Clean Energy program and helped create Business Leaders for Climate Solutions and the New Energy Cities program. Rhys Roth is here today to tell us about the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative, an effort to address climate change by increasing the capacity of our rural and urban landscapes to absorb carbon. Welcome, Rhys.
Thanks, Dan. Glad to be here.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Climate Solutions?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit organization that works in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana to accelerate practical and profitable solutions to global warming. So we really see global warming as a pivotal challenge for our generation, and that we need to move very, very quickly to transform how we utilize and produce and distribute energy first and foremost. And with Northwest Biocarbon Initiative, we really see that there's a second solution in addition to moving off of fossil fuels that are the main driver of increased greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere. We also need to increase the Earth's capacity to absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, because we put so much pollution up there, we've actually passed the safe point and really need to reduce the levels of carbon in the atmosphere in addition to not continuing to add more.
Well, you're here to talk about the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative. What is biocarbon? Would you define it?
It's essentially the ability of plants and trees and soil to pull carbon dioxide from the atmosphere in the growth phase of plants and then retain it in trees and plants and soils. So the biocarbon imperative is really the need to scale up the land-based carbon, the ability of our ecological systems to pull carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So that's what we've been calling biocarbon, essentially biological carbon sequestration in scientific jargon.
Would you elaborate on how the biocarbon that is stored and released affects climate change?
Yeah, well, we really started to move into the path of tackling biocarbon when we looked at some emerging science, in particular a paper by Dr. James Hansen, who's the director of NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies, preeminent physicist who's been at the forefront of climate science for 20-plus years. He assembled a team to look at where do we really need to end up in terms of the atmospheric carbon dioxide levels that are a key regulator of climate on the planet. And when the Industrial Revolution began, the carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere was about 280 parts per million. Now it's about close to 390 parts per million, because over the last 200-plus years, we've been scaling up the burning of fossil fuels, releasing carbon that was stored in the Earth's crust safely, took form over millions of years. By burning those fuels, we liberated that carbon to the atmosphere, and that's accumulated. So this paper looked at analog climates, did a whole variety of physical studies, and concluded that really to have a reasonable insurance that we're not going to have the climate system go haywire and cause catastrophic impacts on people and living systems, 350 parts per million is really where we need to aim. So the climate we inherited was 280 parts per million. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we're about 390 parts per million now, and we really need to get back to 350 parts per million. The problem is we're still continuing to burn fossil fuels. On the energy side, if we really hit a home run and we move very rapidly away from the burning of coal and the releasing of carbon from coal burning, and we eliminate that globally by 2030, we're going to peak at about 425 parts per million, and we need to be at 350 parts per million. So the biocarbon imperative is really about the 75 parts per million in addition that's already been put in the atmosphere that we need to pull out by scaling up forests, by scaling up better agriculture practices, and by greening our cities and urban landscapes. So there's a lot of very positive biocarbon solutions that can make forest practices practices better, make our agriculture practices better, make our cities more livable, that we need to move on in order to address that 75 parts per million that needs to be pulled from the atmosphere through biological means.
Would you underscore the overall goal of the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative?
Yeah, we really see that the Northwest can play a leading role. It's going to take 3 to 5 years for climate change to reemerge on a national agenda and to have a chance of a sane national policy around climate change. So we're looking for the Northwest to play a catalytic role as sort of the leading laboratory and incubator for the science and the policy and the business models and the best practices that are going to have to go global in order to meet this planet-wide biocarbon imperative. We see a lot of innovators here in both the science and the best practices around biocarbon, and the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative is about galvanizing those innovators to lead the way and to sort of show how this can be done in a way that in 3 to 5 years, when we're looking at putting together a national climate policy, that then our leadership here and innovation here can inform that national policy and show the pathway.
What ways does the landscape of the Northwest offer an opportunity for a biocarbon initiative?
Our forests, our temperate rainforests, are among the world's greatest stores of carbon. So first and foremost, better forest management practices can make a huge impact on biocarbon. So we have vast federal forests, and so the U.S. Forest Service sort of changing its mission to be able to increase the benefits for biocarbon in ways that create restoration jobs for local communities. Our working forests can move toward longer rotations, selective cutting, potentially thinning out some of the overgrowth that's accumulated because of fire suppression. Forestry is a big, big opportunity. Agriculture, we also have a lot of agriculture land, and by moving toward no-till agriculture, by building the organic content of our agricultural soils through precision farming and different grazing management practices, we can increase the carbon content of agricultural soils. And then in the urbanized landscape, there's a lot of opportunities to plan for parks, to control suburban sprawl, to convert pavement to green space, to make the cities more livable in ways that enhance carbon storage.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Reese Roth, Director of Strategic Innovation for Climate Solutions. Our topic is the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. If you look at the Northwest and the different types of steps that could be taken, how much of a difference is likely to be made in climate change? How much potential is there really?
You know, we've wrestled with that a lot with our partners, and it's really difficult to get a handle on that, to quantify that into a nice, clean number at this stage. We're early in the process in the science of biocarbon. We're just starting down that path. And so in the next few years, we're hoping that we can start to get a sense of, you know, what could the Northwest contribution be to solving the biocarbon challenge? But we're not there yet. So we want to move down this path, identify what the best practices are, start to get a handle on per acre, what can the benefits be through better forest management practices, through better agriculture practices, through urban strategies on the urbanized landscape. But we're not quite there yet. The paper by Dr. James Hansen that really identified this biocarbon imperative, the challenge to pull another 75 parts per million or so from the atmosphere in terms of carbon dioxide that's accumulated in the atmosphere, it's pushed us beyond where we need to be. That paper pointed, I think for the first time, to the potential for better forest management and land management practices to help address the climate challenge in a quantified way. And so that paper suggested that there's a pathway towards 75 parts per million that is feasible. But again, the science is not that fully developed yet in this arena. So we want to focus attention on that, get scientists really paying attention to that, devoting some effort to quantifying what the opportunities are. And in the meantime, move in this direction, because we know that this is the direction the world has to move in.
In terms of impact, how are efforts to increase biocarbon storage in the Northwest likely to compare with, for example, preventing loss of the Amazon rainforest? I realize the numbers are uncertain, but just if you could just give us a sense of the likely comparison.
Pretty much as a baseline, if we're going to meet this biocarbon imperative, if we're going to be able to pull 75 parts per million carbon dioxide from the atmosphere by scaling up the capacity of the Earth to absorb carbon, we've got to stop net deforestation. So before we can even start to scale up biocarbon absorption by living systems, we've got to stop destroying those living systems and releasing the carbon from them. So we've got to find a way internationally to enable the countries that have tropical rainforests to stop destroying them. So that's a given. That has to happen. On top of that, we have to find ways to enhance the ability of the living systems that we have in the Northwest and everywhere else to begin to pull more carbon from the atmosphere. So we have to move in this direction, and the Northwest forests are one of the great reserves of carbon on the Earth, and they can be absorbing more carbon with better management practices. So I don't know if that's helpful in terms of a comparison, but it's really an and. Both these things need to be happening.
Would you now like to speak about some of the specific projects currently underway that are contributing to the goals of the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative?
Sure. We're starting to look at identifying the innovation that's happening out there. And one of the key principles in terms of what makes a good biocarbon project or biocarbon best practices is that there are multiple benefits. So we've actually done a great short 3-4 minute video on one project around the Tualatin River where Clean Water Services, which is a wastewater treatment utility in the greater Portland area, they were looking at having to install a chiller to cool the water that they were releasing into the Tualatin River because the water that they were releasing was too warm and it was harming fish downstream. That chiller was going to cost in the order of $100 million. So they convened the community and looked at alternatives and actually partnered with farmers and landowners upstream. And for a fraction of the cost, about a tenth of the cost, they are restoring land, paying the landowners upstream, planting hundreds of thousands of trees, enhancing the habitat, and actually by restoring the riparian, the streamside vegetation over about 50 miles upstream, they've actually are cooling the Tualatin River by an amount equal to what the chiller would have done at 10 times the cost. So rather than the hard infrastructure solution of the chiller that would have been an energy sucking machine that caused the release of a lot of carbon dioxide, they are restoring habitat in a way that enhances the landscape's ability to absorb carbon and enhances the river system for wildlife and for fish, benefits rural landowners because they're getting paid to essentially host these restoration projects, and it's kickstarting a new restoration industry for the companies that actually are growing the native plants and installing them upstream. That's one example of the kind of project that can be a win-win-win that can benefit biocarbon, wildlife, save money, and work at a lot of different levels. So those are the kind of projects that we're really looking to highlight and replicate.
To what extent are there other projects similar to the one you just described going on in the Northwest?
Well, we're sort of doing an inventory to identify those. There's a very, very inspiring one outside of the Northwest in the city of Philadelphia. Mayor Michael Nutter they were looking at having to spend $9 billion to upgrade the combined sewer and stormwater systems of the city. And he thought, well, one, we don't really have $9 billion handy, and if we did, why would we bury that investment 150 feet underground in pipe? So instead, they're taking $2 billion, a fraction of the $9 billion they would have spent on hard infrastructure, and they are greening the city, 15 square miles of the city with vegetated green roofs, with permeable roads, with parks, just bringing vegetation and life to the city in a way that will result in reducing the stormwater flow equally to what the hard infrastructure would have done at a fraction of the cost and in ways that really make the city much more livable, much more beautiful, and a much nicer place to live. Converting concrete jungle into a sort of green oasis in a way that solves its very real and immediate problem that they were facing.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Reese Roth, co-founder and director of strategic innovation for climate solutions. Our topic is the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative. Would you comment on what's going on in the area of agriculture that might help contribute to the biocarbon initiative?
Yeah, our partners at the Washington State University Climate Friendly Farmer Program have been looking at how agriculture intersects with climate change over the last 5 years or so. And we did another video, another 3 to 4 minute video profiling one of the real superstars in this area, a farmer named John Ashelman, an Eastern Washington wheat farmer who's been practicing no-till agriculture for probably 15 years. And they've actually drilled down into his soil. So essentially, instead of tilling up the field every year, it's a practice that enables him to plant without doing that. It results in a lot of microbial life and worms and real vital soil life that enhances the carbon content of the soil dramatically, to the point that he can grow corn in unirrigated land on the soil just because the organic content of the soil is so rich. And they drilled down in the soil and found that the worms have been migrating 7, 8, 9 feet down, essentially bringing carbon organic content down that deep into the soil over the course of all this time that he's been practicing no-till agriculture. The carbon content of his soil and the depth to which the rich soil life was migrating down really surprised the researchers. And so that's a pretty recent find. So quantifying what the potential is if John Ashelman's practices are adopted widely, that's just beginning to happen. But it's really promising. There's a lot more potential carbon storage in those agricultural soils than they had assumed going into their studies.
In the area of regreening cities, what are some of the promising projects in this area?
Well, it's interesting. I think this whole idea of rethinking how we manage stormwater, moving from sort of the hard infrastructure mentality of building pipes and treatment plants to thinking in terms of how do we enhance the urbanized landscape's ability to absorb water in ways that actually enhance the urbanized landscape's ability to absorb carbon from the atmosphere. So it's another multi-benefit sort of approach where we can save a lot of money by treating stormwater in ways that green up our communities and reduce the stormwater flow and absorb carbon from the atmosphere. So rethinking how we do stormwater infrastructure is one key solution. And then rethinking how we develop our communities and moving from the model of sprawling ever outward and low density, auto-dependent development patterns to more village scale, more dense development patterns. And to do that, we really need to make our communities and our cities livable. And so the greening them up and bringing trees and vegetation and beauty into our communities is absolutely essential to making them livable. So it's a great challenge that people have been working on, but it's extraordinarily important from a climate standpoint.
Are there specific projects that you would like to highlight in the Northwest?
I think there's just an array of efforts going on a lot of fronts, and biocarbon provides another lens that we need to start looking at this from. There's some great work going on at the University of Washington in terms of quantifying how much carbon different development patterns absorb. So from the suburban, large, managed lawns to urban parks of various sorts and everything in between. Looking at City of Seattle, Seattle Public Utilities project to assist people in developing bioswales in their yards that can help absorb stormwater, quantifying the carbon benefits of that. all this sort of innovation is going on, and I think bringing the carbon lens to it is really important. So we'll be working with those folks, we'll be identifying those innovators, and where they're doing things that benefit biocarbon now but aren't really seeing that, we're going to help them see that they're biocarbon innovators and part of the biocarbon solution, and start to quantify the benefits of what they're doing. So there's a lot of wonderful things happening, even where people don't realize that they're doing it in ways that benefit the climate. They are, so we want to help them realize that.
If you look at the different types of projects, the reforestation and restoring watersheds, the regreening of cities and agriculture, which types of projects are likely to have the most impact in terms of carbon storage?
Well, again, I think the quantification is just in its infancy. So we're not to the point now where we can sort of rate which kind of project and even recommend what biocarbon best practices are in different landscapes. It's going to be very landscape-specific, ecosystem-specific. It's going to be very different on the west side of the mountains than on the east side. All this knowledge needs to be developed over the next few years and implemented and extended over the next 20 as we really try to scale up around the planet to address the biocarbon imperative. So we're not quite to the stage yet where we can point to what's going to have the greatest impact. There's a lot of things that need to happen on a lot of different fronts. So I think each of us can take a little piece and look around in our community and in our yard and think about how can we enhance the carbon content of the soil here and the plant life immediately around us in ways that create more beauty.
What are the best steps to take to make carbon storage projects increase in number and take place faster?
Well, where we need to get, sort of the end game, is a national policy that provides a revenue flow to tip the economic balance so that large landscape managers of forests, of agriculture land, as well as our urbanized landscape, that those decision makers, that the economic benefit of moving in a pro-biocarbon direction is clear. So essentially we need a national climate policy that, one, moves us away from fossil fuels, and two, creates a revenue stream for solutions, including biocarbon solutions. So John Ashelman on his farm could actually get paid for the carbon benefit that he's providing the planet. A private forest landowner could actually get paid for moving to longer rotation. I think in order to scale this and make it global and to make that impact on the atmosphere ultimately, pull 75 parts per million from the atmosphere, that is an enormous amount of carbon dioxide that we need to pull out of the atmosphere. And it's going to require a shift in the economics. So developing, getting that national policy and that revenue stream in place nationally is going to be essential, but that's going to take a little bit of time. Probably, we see at least 3 years, maybe 5 years before we can talk seriously about a national policy. In the meantime, we want to work in the Northwest for this area to be sort of the incubator and the laboratory for the best practices to develop the knowledge around what it's going to take to do this.
What other groups are partners with Climate Solutions in the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative?
Some of the leading conservation groups in the Northwest, Conservation Northwest, Climate Trust, Washington Environmental Council, American Farmland Trust, Pacific Forest Trust, a lot of trusts here. These are some of our partners, along with the Bullitt Foundation and the Wilberforce Foundation.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That really there are two things that need to happen to address the climate crisis. One, we have to move off of fossil fuels to clean energy as quickly as possible. And two, we need to regreen the planet, to scale up the Earth's capacity to pull carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. We need to move away from cutting down the tropical rainforest and also enhancing our forest ability, our agriculture land's ability, and the lands in our communities where we live. Enhancing them, regreen them, scale up their biocarbon absorbing capacity. So there's really two major solutions to the climate crisis. This is our generation's great challenge. We've got a little time to figure this out. It needs to happen over the next 20 years. It's doable, it's big, and it needs to become a key part of our future.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Reese.
Thank you, Diane. Really appreciate it.
You have just been listening to Reese Roth, Director of Strategic Innovation for Climate Solutions, speak about the Northwest Biocarbon Initiative. For more information, check on the web at www.climatesolutions.org/NBI. Again, that's climatesolutions.org/NBI. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archives section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters Sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.